I feel full. During this Advent season, to our focus of hope and peace, we now breathe in joy, the infallible sign of the presence of God. The psalmist said, "Make a joyful noise, break forth into joyous song, and sing praises." As every heart prepares, heaven and nature sing, joy to the world. Joy is my natural state of being, but joy does not simply happen to me. I must choose joy and keep choosing it every day. Joy is a state of transcendence, not about being happy or unhappy, but peaceful, quiet, in absolute equilibrium. So silent and alive that one's silence is a song, that one's song is nothing but one's silence. Joy arises within me. It has nothing to do with the outside. It is not caused by others. It is not caused at all. It is the spontaneous flow of my very own unique energy. It is the happiness of God expressed through its perfect idea, me. I have all I need to experience joy every day. Not because life is always good, but because God is good. When the mind is fixed on the things of spirit, joy is strength-giving. When I'm going through a hard time, I remember that joy awaits me on the other side. Joy is the essence of spirit energy in me. It may be subdued at times, but it is always there. It can never be suppressed or denied. As I open my heart to God, joy bursts out and gratitude flows in. I remember that no matter how dark the night may be, joy comes in the morning. When I think of the blessings in my life, a sense of gratitude and joy overcomes me. The more I express joy, the more I see manifestations of love all around me. I don't have to wait for something to happen to feel joy. I can choose joy anytime by holding expectant, jubilant thoughts of abundant life and love, regardless of any circumstance. As I focus on all the good in my life and in my world, I see even more good being expressed. When I announce the good news to every part of my being, and allow my Christ light to shine, the fullness of joy radiates out to bless all those around me. Let joy be your strength as you navigate the holidays. Let the world be ruled with truth and grace and wonders of your love and wonders of your love.
lights around the tree. Mama's whistling takes me back again. There's something about December. We're hanging mistletoe and hoping that it snows. I close my eyes and then I can still remember how to get back home. Let all your memories hold you close, no matter where you are. Christmas is in your heart. Who really needs a gift? What love is meant to give, I can still recall. Carry with me all. Lights around the tree. Mama's whistling takes me back again. There's something about December that all your memories hold you close, no matter where you are. You're not alone because the ones you love are never far. If Christmas is in your heart.
So beautiful, Adrian. Thank you so much for sharing your gift of music. And Sarah, I just wanted to say that I feel like you're a national treasure. Every time I get to experience you offering those prayerful daily messages, there's something so soothing and something so deeply rooted, my phrase for the day. And so I just want to acknowledge you and thank you for that as well. So this month, December, my partner and I got to travel to Maui. My partner has long been a devotee of Ram Dass in the bhakti culture. And there has been a retreat that has been happening in Maui for a very long time because that's where Ram Dass lived for almost the last 20 years of his life. And so this retreat was a tradition. And if you know anything about the spiritual teacher Ram Dass, you know that he transitioned at the end of 2019. Exactly, I think tomorrow may be the actual anniversary of his passing. And so that happened, and then COVID happened, and so that retreat had been postponed for 2 years, and this was the first time that they re-invited people to come to Maui. And what was bittersweet about it was the first retreat without their beloved Baba, Ram Dass, there. And many of the people who had come had been there many times, but there was also a lot of new people who aligned with and were drawn to those particular spiritual traditions. And it was really quite something to be there and to share in the depth and the beauty of those experiences, to do the kirtan, the chanting, and of course to be on Maui. But one particular thing stuck out to me. There is a beautiful woman with such sage wisdom. Her name is Mirabai Bush, and she had been a longstanding friend of Ram Dass. In fact, they had traveled together in the hippie days in India when they had come across what was to be their guru, Maharaji. And Mirabai and Ram Dass, they've written books together, and Mirabai was there. And she led the group in an exercise. And I'm gonna share a little bit of this exercise with you, but it's similar to exercises that you've probably done before, but it's an eye-to-eye exercise where you had to join with someone else. And the sole purpose of these kind of dyads is to drop deeper, because even being in a spiritual retreat, even being at Unity of New York, even being among friends, there can sometimes be this persona or this lens of what's coming to me as checked outness, where we're not fully present. And this exercise, and others that I'm sure that you have done, is designed to bring us into the present, bring us into the present. And so she called it Just Like Me. And so you were to look at this other person, and she had curated these lists of things like, this person has known joy, just like me. This person has experienced a great loss, just like me. This person has held within them great amount of hope, just like me. This person has been profoundly disappointed, just like me. This person has felt betrayed, just like me. This person has felt the ignition of love in their heart, just like me. And it was so beautifully designed the way that it happened, because you had to stare in the person's eyes. And as she read these off, you didn't say anything. You just acknowledged their presence. And of all of the pinnacle events that happened in this retreat, the releasing of his ashes in the shores of Maui, that one stood out to me, because I felt, I could sense energetically, that it was the singular time where everybody brought all of their feelings, whether it was their grief, whether it was their challenge from COVID and all of the things that cultivated in the global uncertainty that we continue to feel, whether it was elation to see their friends. No matter what it was, it brought everybody together in this sacred moment of stillness. Do you remember when Reverend Britt was reading, giving us the meditation, and he was talking about joy, but he said joy wasn't something that's necessarily surface, you know, a bombastic or something broad and big out there. That joy is cultivated and expressed from something that is a knowing, a stillness inside of us. And that exercise really brought that stillness to light. And I got weepy, because as I was doing this exercise, I really felt connected, not only to the person in front of me, but to the entirety of all of those people, like I had never been connected before. Something brought me out of sort of any kind of self-absorption, ego thought of not belonging or tiredness or whatever. It brought me into this moment, brought me into this moment. And so just like me, it's a beautiful exercise. You know, we do have just very few days left in this year. And it's wonderful how when we as humans work with time, we work with a calendar year, we give ourselves greater permission at this time of year to clean things up, you know, to sort of metaphorically clean up our own backyard, to mend things. At least it's an opportunity for us, and we give ourselves greater permission to do that. There's a greater sense of personal allowing. And I'm wondering if, to make something intangible tangible, that you could begin to think about all of the things, all of the people in your life, all of the unfinished business, and you could begin to cultivate an exercise of just like me. I'm going to do the entire exercise when I'm with all of those who are pledgers in January. I'm going to use that as part of our time together, and I'm excited to share the whole thing with you. But find a way to use this internal permission right now to really make some tangible healing opportunities to come to light, to re-remember, to reawaken to why you and I are here. I know that you're tired. I know that so many of us around us are hurting in ways that feel foreign. And I'm not saying not to feel those things. But it's interesting, it's paradoxical to realize that at the same time that we acknowledge those things, instead of overlap them with busyness or to self-medicate in some way or to avoid, that we allow those feelings to have full reign, to feel them fully, because paradoxically, when we do that, the polarity, like Reverend Britt and I were talking about, that which feels sorrowful, if we allow the sorrow to, if we can feel it fully, we are able to feel the joy more fully. In fact, we can feel joy in a tangible way, unlike any other time perhaps that we felt it. It becomes real because we've not shunned or labeled or defined one as bad and one as good. That's really one of the greatest spiritual wisdoms that we can incorporate. That if it is all God, then those things are a part of God. They're on a spectrum of, we can call that spectrum feeling, emotion. And our opportunity is to go back and to heal all of the judgments that we have placed upon ourselves. You know, we'll remember things like, well, spiritual people don't feel that way, or good little boys or good little girls don't do that. And so we have stunted our relationship with emotion. And we have labeled some things as good and some things as bad. And the interesting thing is the ones that we label bad are the ones that stick and stay the longest because they're not flowing. And so I want you to think on this Advent season, all of these beautiful words, today's joy. And I want you to think that it isn't just siloed in that word, that it comes with the full spectrum. It comes with the whole range of emotion. And that when we give ourselves the gift of all of that, that when we feel fully, then joy becomes not just a concept, but a reality. And so I was thinking about all of this and about some of the ways that I continue, even in my unconsciousness, sometimes to judge and label things as acceptable and not acceptable, and to be more tender and compassionate, to not try to push a thought away, but to look at the thought with compassion and go, oh, isn't that interesting? And I was thinking of the symbology of the Christ child, and I was thinking about all of the many, many decades of platform ministry, Christmas Sundays, and all of the Christmas stories, and what makes that story unique and fresh? Because we've often talked about the fact that the birth of the Christ child is really our story. It is a retelling of every individual soul coming into existence to fulfill a personal history, a mission, if you will, to maximize their incarnation, to reawaken and to become self-aware as much as possible. What does that mean? To become self-aware as much as possible. It means that there are these vectors that happen in our lives that try to shake us and wake us up. A lot of times those things are crises, illness, disappointments. Again, like the exercise, just like me, it's all of these shared experiences that come with a part of the human curriculum. And as Ram Dass used to say, you might as well take the curriculum. In other words, don't run from things. Dive into those things, feel them fully, and realize and understand what they are. They are, in effect, an assistance to continue to push us to more of the embodiment of what the Christ child stands for, because you and I are emblems, instruments, vessels of that Christhood. So it's our story. And to the degree that we can revere ourselves, to the degree that we can let others off the hook and take ownership of our own interior world, is the degree in which we bring the embodiment of joy into light. You know, this last week, one of the great feminist writers, authors, her name was Bell Hooks, passed away. And I have loved Bell Hooks's writings, and it reminded me of a quote that she said, "But many of us seek community solely to escape the fear of being alone." I want to read that to you again. "But many of us seek community solely to escape the fear of being alone." That's neither good nor bad, right or wrong, but it's interesting to see the motivation behind why we go and do something. She goes on to say, "Knowing how to be solitary is central to the art of loving." Knowing how to be solitary is central to the art of loving. When we can be alone, we can be with others without using them as a means of escape. That's really powerful to me, because what she is saying and what I take from that is that when we can become so in love with, comfortable with ourselves, that we can be in the stillness with ourselves and not need the noise and the distractions of the outside world, that we can show up more fully as the Christ child, that we can live the Christmas story every hour of every day. It is possible. It is possible. We think that that is unattainable, but it's actually how we are designed. If you can think about how the beauty and the intricacy of how each and every one of us is made, it's a powerful thing. And so with that remembrance is also the way in which we forget. There are so many ways in which we as a species forget. There's one particular Christmas carol. It's the title of today's talk, "Do You Hear What I Hear?" And perhaps you are familiar with the story, but once of how it came to be, but once I heard the story of how it came to be, of course, I can't unknow it, but it changes the dynamic of that legendary classic in a way that makes this probably one of the most poignant Christmas songs for me, in my heart. Perhaps some of you were around when there was this thing called the Cuban Missile Crisis. First of all, this carol was not hundreds of years ago. It was written in 1962. So it's actually not that old. And right around that time, there was a lot of warring and crisis going on. And there was something called the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was 12 days in 1962, where there was believed to be an imminent nuclear war threat between the USSR, now Russia, and the United States. And it wasn't just a threat to us. That fear loomed large across the world. So I want you to imagine a 12-day period where you woke up and you thought this could be it. And right around this same time, this husband and wife composer team, his name was Noel, I may mispronounce it, Renier, and Gloria Shane, were lyricists and composers. They lived in New York City, and they were contacted by their publisher to try their hand at a Christmas song. And they had a lot of feeling around that. First of all, Noel had been a product of the war in Europe when he was a young man. And he felt he still carried a lot of PTSD, a lot of trauma from that. Christmas to him had become very commercialized. He wasn't interested in just writing something that had no meaning. But then this Cuban Missile Crisis happened, and he was in his producer's office, and the producer would check the television all the time to see if there was any announcement that this was it, that the bomb was coming, the nuclear bomb was coming. So again, imagine this heightened just urgency and fear. And so Noel was in his car and he was riding back home to go see his wife when he looked out, maybe it was a taxi, and he looked out the taxi window and he saw two mothers pushing babies in baby carriages. And he noticed that the two babies were connecting. They were sort of laughing and pointing at one another as they were going down the sidewalks of Manhattan. And he got very emotional because he thought, how have we come to this? How have we as a species come to the point that we could discard human life and be so reckless? And from that, between getting home and composing this with his wife, they came up with this song called Do You Hear What I Hear? And so if you remember the lyrics to me are a recipe. They're sort of, this is connected to this, is connected to this, is connected to this, in order to produce something that we desire. And it starts with the night wind. Said the night wind to the little lamb. When you think about the night wind, it is perceived to be an inanimate object. But the night wind is symbolic of that ethereal, that presence that you and I call God. It is the absolute. It is creation itself. It is life. It is the backbone of all that is living and is in existence. And so this inanimate thing speaks to something animate. And what does it choose first to speak to? It speaks to a little lamb. If you look in the Unity Metaphysical Dictionary, the symbology of the lamb is the innocent, guileless form of life. So here is the ethereal choosing first to go to the thing that will receive it the best. And that is the innocent, guileless form of life. It's interesting that that is found within the animal plane of consciousness and not the human plane of consciousness. Doesn't that say something about the hierarchy of evolution, that sometimes we think that we're up here and perhaps we're not? But in that innocent, guileless animal plane of consciousness is whispered these ideas, you know, do you see what I see? You know, It's as if we did that exercise that I told you about in Maui with the Christ child. We're standing eye to eye with the Christ child. And it's, do you see what I see? Just like me, can you see the perfection in the world? Do you see a star dancing in the night? Can you see this guidepost that's going to lead you to your own rebirth? And the little lamb, that innocent explanation of the animal kingdom, goes to the next level of innocent in the human realm or human plane of consciousness, which is the shepherd boy. Innocence meeting innocence again, because we know that there won't be any resistance. And they're looking at one another face to face, just like the exercise, just like me, and says, do you see what I see? Do you hear what I hear ringing through the sky? Do you hear what I hear ringing through the sky, shepherd boy? Can you hear it? In other words, can you hear the reassurance? Can you hear the word of God? Can you hear, not just intellectually see or read the attributes of the Advent, but can you hear it pulsating in the very life force of all things? Can you hear it in the song high above the tree? Can you hear it in the voice as big as the sea? Everything is a reminder that all is God. And then suffer the children to lead us to the one, right? And so what does the next lyric say? The next lyric says, said the shepherd boy to the mighty king. So now you see that the innocence of us, that which is the untainted, the pure of us that knows no harm, goes to this thing that is the perceived authority. And in fact, it becomes the authority, as it says to the mighty king, do you know what I know? Can you imagine a small child coming to you and saying, do you know what I know? And really stopping and listening to what that is? Because he's saying, in your appearance of a palace that's warm, in your conformity, in the things of that represent all of your accumulation and our identity, do you know that there is something out there? There is an innocence that requires attention, that shivers in the cold. And we should bring that child that shivers in the cold. We should bring that purity, all of our love and our adoration, in the form of silver and gold, or anything that is symbolic of that. And to the king's credit, he listens and he obeys. And then the king, then from that place of leadership, speaks to the masses, and he says the most pivotal, important thing: pray for peace, people everywhere. Pray for peace, people everywhere. That purity, that child that is sleeping in the night, it is the thing, it is the salvation, it is the truth, and we must learn to honor that. And so that is the Christmas message. And I can't think of anyone better to sing this for us. And there's a special treat coming, and Leo's going to bring it in for you.
A